The Zone is brought to you by CC Power Sports of Louisville, home of Kawasaki, Yamaha, Suzuki, Can-Am, Sea-Doo, SSR, and Bad Boy zero-turn mowers. CC Power Sports of Louisville offers the best winter discounts on all motorcycles, ATVs, side-by-sides, and personal watercraft in the area. Beat cabin fever and come into CC Power Sports of Louisville. I-65, 7 minutes south of the airport.
You know what time it is.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Jason Anderson.
Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville.
With the second pick in the 2019 WNBA Draft, the New York Liberty select Asia Durr from the University of Louisville.
If ever there was going to be a time to be challenging the NCAA and all of that thing, it would be when there are about 1,000 different co-defendants, you know, that are staring down the barrel of major violations as well. You got a gazillion student athletes out there who are going to be implicated in all of these things. You've got, you know, Arizona and Kansas and LSU. No telling what Michael Avenatti winds up turning up. I mean, it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So I think the NCAA's resources will be strained to a degree. The problem for Louisville comes back to the fact that even if we decide we're going to make a blanket settlement against all these guys, except for you who were already on probation.
Come on, everybody.
You're in the Zone.
In the Zone.
The Zone with Jason Anderson. Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville.
All this is going to be so big.
Want to be part of the show? Give us a call at 267-9680.
Now,
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
It's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
You have to see some of the potential unless you have an unearthly body.
Richard Kimball. Dr. Richard Kimball in The Fugitive. Not Bo Kimball, who Lamar Kimball is related to. Any other famous Kimballs we can get into? There was Kimball Anders that was a running back who was actually named after Kimball in The Fugitive. There's got to be some other Kimballs out there. We'll get into more Kimballs. Bo Kimball, Lamar Kimball, Richard Kimball. They're all out there. Reds, by the way, won today 5-0. They have won 3 in a row. That is a winning streak. They are 21.
Hashtag put your friend.
That's exactly right. Hashtag put your friend. They swept the Marlins by a total of 21-1. They beat the Marlins the last 3 games, 21-1. So that's good. The team I root for has the worst baseball or bullpen in the history of bullpens. Rick Bosis joins us now on ESPN 680 105.7, joining us to talk some sports, less about baseball right now, more about some college basketball and a lot of things going on, and some golf as well. Rick, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Bo Kimball, one of my favorite college players back in that Loyola Marymount team. I saw him play in the 1990 regional out in Oakland. I think they played against UNLV.
That's right, yeah. Was one of my favorite players, too, as a youngster. The left-handed free throw, all of that, that's still known. I found out he was related to Bo Kimball. I'm like, cool. I don't know anything about this Lamar Kimball guy, Rick, but his nickname's fresh. He's related to Bo Kimball. I'm on board.
He can shoot. He can score.
Yeah, well, they need it. I was talking about, we can just start there since it's news today with Louisville getting Lamar Kimball, the grad transfer from St. Joe's, almost 16 points per game, a few assists per game, but they did move him to off guard. He'd been point guard for the first couple of years in which he had some games of double-digit assists, a number of games of 8 and 9 assists in a game. He also was a guy that, you know, had a decent amount of turnovers too, so he wasn't necessarily the most efficient guy. But he also was required to do a lot for St. Joe's as well. So there's a, you know, context and perspective to a lot of different things. But I said in the last hour, Rick, that, you know, Louisville was very much in need of playmakers, of people that can add a little, dynamic ability to their offense, that they really didn't have that. And if they throw an influx of this kid, who people really like and say can really go and is fast and can create, and Samuel Williamson, and if Jordan Wara returns, I think you're looking at a different Louisville team that all of a sudden was, offensively strapped a year ago, and how they could, you know, run their offense to something that would give Chris Mack a few more options into what he can do on the offensive end of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at what Chris Mack did at Xavier, I mean, he had Sumner and he had I believe he had Tu Holloway, and he had McCura, and he had, you know, Remy Abel, and he had some guys that could get some things done offensively more than, you know, the this year's team did. And so I agree with you. I think I would expect there might be one more addition in terms of a grad transfer in the backcourt, because in the ACC, it's dangerous going into the ACC depending on freshman guards. I think that's a formula for a long season. It's not a league that really is conducive to that.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And you would have Perry as a junior. You would have Kimball as a grad transfer senior. McMahon would be a senior as well. So at least you would have experienced guys in the backcourt. That is, if Perry's there next year. I don't know that he's going to be. We always know there's attrition that happens. I don't know that Enoch and Wara are both going to return to Louisville. I've said that, you know, I'm sort of approaching this year, Rick, and looking at rosters as Hero and Keldon Johnson are not on Kentucky's roster, and Enoch and Wara are not on Louisville's roster. And when those things change, then I'll add them in. But I'm sort of approaching it that way and assessing Louisville next year. Are you doing the same thing, or are you looking at it and thinking, no, Wara or Enoch is going to return? So that's kind of how you'll start to look at next year's roster as we sit right now on the 11th.
I would think one of them would be back, but I couldn't tell you which one. I mean, neither one of them. I mean, Warren, I guess, has a chance to be drafted towards the end of the first round, but he's more likely a second-round pick. I'm not sure if Enoch's going to be drafted at all, but I've heard some talk that he has the possibility to play overseas or something. I don't know. So, I mean, we don't know. We're not going to know until, like Chris Mack said last week at his press conference, until June or July. That's when he's going to have a better feeling of what the roster is. And in Kentucky, my sense is that I think Johnson will go. From what I've been told, everybody said he's got to be a lottery pick. I think if he's in the first half of the draft, he will go. Hero's a harder call. My sense from what I heard when I was around Kentucky during the two weekends of the NCAA tournament that he's definitely going to take a strong look at it, but I think he's 50-52.
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking at it and saying, look, if they're gone, And if either of them return, I think more likely to return is Tyler Hero, then hey, that's icing on the cake, and we'll see what ends up happening. But there's going to be attrition, and I think, you know, we had heard, or at least some on the recruiting trail or those that follow it, even with the grad transfers, that there were a few people or players that Louisville was really looking at. And in fact, Jeff Goodman put out a list, sometime last week, leading into the Final Four, of the best grad transfers that he thought were out there. And then he put the list together of teams that were interested, and maybe that player was interested in those schools. And there are two players listed with Louisville as the first school, and it's not alphabetical order or anything. And that would be a Christian Keeling and Rajon Tucker, who were also big time scorers, guys that can create, guys that can slash, guys that can knock down shots, which is really in line of what Louisville is looking for. And so, If that comes out last week and there seems to be a connection from Goodman and others that might be tied in to these couple players, and then they get Lamar Kimball, maybe it was first come, first serve between those three guys. Or maybe it's no, they're looking at all three of them because they'll try to take multiple if they can, and there's going to be more attrition, and they just simply cannot turn away guys that can create and be, you know, dynamic to a certain degree, even if they were dynamic at you know, Little Rock or where was Keeling at? He was at Charleston Southern. So even if that's right. The case, you need to bring in anybody that's dynamic.
Well, and you got to think that the news on VJ King means that he's out of here, which why wouldn't he be? He's not going to play. Didn't play much this year. I noticed he made one three-point shot after November 27th, and he was a non-factor. And there's a part of me that thinks that Wara, you know, won't be back. So if you lose that many guys, I think at that point you do need to take multiple grad transfers, because although you've got a really good freshman class, you know, we've seen just at some of the other schools that the optimism usually outpaces what the production is for most freshmen.
Yeah. Rick Bozich is our guest on ESPN 680 105.7. Ashton Higgins is returning to Kentucky next year. Not even going to test the waters, which I find to be surprising, to be honest with you. I thought, you know, with so much talk this season when he was really playing well defensively and also scoring in the high teens and a couple of games in the 20s, that people were saying, wow, this guy might be drafted in the first round and draft on potential, but he doesn't even test the waters. What's your view on the impact for Kentucky that they know for a fact, at least when it comes to point guard, that Ashton Higgins will return next year as somebody who can be a primary ball handler?
It's huge. Until the last weekend, or maybe the last, just the last week of the season, I think most of the vibe about him was what a dynamic defender he was, what a selfless player he was, just having to improve his jump shot and his offensive game. He didn't play great in Kansas City, but it's a mature decision. Maybe he looked at P.J. Washington and said, I need to follow that formula and try to make myself better. And it's a mature take on his part. And having been in Kansas City, my sense in the locker room from talking to those guys that they all felt disappointment at losing, but to me, he looked like a guy who felt some embarrassment over losing because he knew that he didn't play near up to the level that he's capable of playing. So I tip my cap to him in terms of saying, hey, I've got a lot to work on and I'm not even going to, take this any farther. I'm just going to stay in the gym and get better. And remember, he moved up a class, so
it's
not really surprising. He might need his body to physically get better and spend more time in the weight room so he'll be ready. In the NBA, he's going to have to be stronger than Steve.
Yeah, I will preface out of the gates that and you probably know this about me, Rick. I like one and dones. I'm okay with the players coming in, playing 1 year, and going off to the pros. I'm good with it. What I don't like though is how and some of it is created with the Cal's roster construction and his recruiting and those one and dones. What I don't like is how it's created what we see as a freshman year is essentially what that player is going to be the rest of his time in college, and I kind of feel like. Maybe it's different now. It might have been immediate after the game and rolling motion. It certainly felt different when Higgins made the announcement he was returning because it seemed like people were generally excited as Kentucky fans that he was going to return. But there were others that were like, it doesn't matter. What good is he? He turns the ball over. He can't shoot. What kind of point guard is that supposed to be? And it's like some, have developed the view that if you're a freshman, whatever you look like, that's what you're going to be the rest of your career. And that is, I think that is absolutely a byproduct of the one and done and the freshman era and seeing how impactful some freshmen can be. And then they go off to the pros. And I think it's, a negative view that that we've sort of skewed and our view is warped of what the college sort of improving process can and used to be like.
My sense on Higgins is from being around him and being around what I've seen at UK over the last 10 years, he was more into winning and team stuff than individual stuff than a lot of guys. And I thought that kind of stuff mattered to him, and he did a lot more team stuff in terms of what he tried to supply as a point guard. And to play at the next level, he's obviously going to have to show more individual offense to get somebody to really believe in him. But I agree with you. I think there's a lot of growth there, and I think he's got the makeup, I think, to be a really good player. I've seen guys that are there that play that position who are more about themselves, and I never got that sense about Higgins, and I think that's a skill.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree with that. I think he's got the makings of someone who can be really good. I felt that about Isaiah Briscoe, and I think 20, 30 years ago, I believe Briscoe would have been a four-year player, and his senior year when he was done, you looked at it and said, wow, what a really, really good career that guy had. Look at all the wins, all the numbers he put up, and how all around of a player, may not have been that good of a shooter. And I think most people looked at his inability to shoot and sort of said, well, he's not a good player because he can't shoot. But and then he went pro and was making money and got some looks at different places, and I think he was with an NBA team as well, so good for him. But he was one of those guys and I'm like, man, he could have been a really, really good viewed college player. And I think Ashton Higgins can be that. He's got some things that you can't teach. right now. So Rick Bozich, WDRB, is our guest. What do you think of the landscape of college basketball now, I guess? Virginia wins it. They beat Texas Tech. There was a thought that it was going to be like 30-25 in the championship game. I know I was snarky in that route. And we see back-to-back years in which a team wins the championship not really having a traditional center and playing guys that are 6'9 or smaller. Is it a change in the landscape? Are we looking and saying that it's way more open than we thought before with teams winning the national championship, or one of those years that sort of happens in the course of 10-15 years of playing this tournament?
Well, first thing I'll do is give credit to Tony Bennett, because I think he did make a little bit of a tweak where, although tempo-wise they still weren't playing much, faster than they have in the past, I think he improved his team offensively in terms of became a more versatile offensive team. And obviously those guys got a year older and more confident, more experienced, and became better shot makers. But in terms of it's just the follow-up of, of Villanova and even the Carolina team the year before, where the older guys have, been more successful. Does that mean next year a team that has really good freshmen can't win? No, I don't think it does. I mean, like, there's a lot of different ways that you can do it, and it's dangerous to come up with one formula and say this is the only way to do it.
Yeah.
But I think the way that Virginia has done it has been impressive to me, and they had one sophomore obviously in Hunter, and then juniors and some seniors, and picking up Key was a huge addition from Alabama. And I think it's good for college basketball that they won the championship. They're a very deserving champion, and they've been good. They've struggled in the tournament, but they've been good in regular season for a number of years, and anybody that's paid attention to the game has to admit that.
Yeah, I do wonder if it's, it happened with me, because I've been on record that I won't pick them to go to the Final Four in my bracket until they do. Now he did this year and he won the whole thing. So next year, if they've got the number one overall seed, I'd have no problem with putting them, in the Final Four. Right. I just didn't trust Tony Bennett. And you're right. He did adjust this year. I mean, Tony Bennett used to be a guy that had the big man that would just be in the paint. And he adjusted, right. And it helps. By the way, Diakite play the way he played helped. If Diakite wasn't playing all that well, yeah. I don't know that Tony Bennett cuts down the nets, and if we're talking about things differently, or we're saying you can't win with that style, Rick, it just can't happen. But Jack Salt goes from playing 20 minutes a game to playing four in the championship game, and Diakite goes from being a guy who's a nice role player to now he's out there for 30 minutes with DeAndre Hunter, and you're switching everything, and he's making you better offensively as well. And it is a adjustment by Tony Bennett from the way and the quote-unquote style that he played, at least from a personnel standpoint on the floor.
No question it was. I mean, Diakite, early in the year, I didn't even think was that big of a factor, but he became a huge I mean, obviously, he made the shot against Purdue, and he gave him a rim protector. He gave him a guy that could run the floor. As you said, he switched on defensive screens, had a tremendous amount of versatility. He was competitive, and that's you got to give Bennett credit, and that he said, "Hey, we got to improve. What ways can we find to improve?" Mm-hmm. And that was one of the key ways that they improved, by becoming more athletic and more versatile in their front court. And it wasn't, when you talk about Virginia, everybody talks about the game last year, but just as embarrassing was it 2 years ago when they only scored 39 points and lost to Florida in the NCAA tournament? I can't see that happening with this team. And I know that they had a couple of bad games, but he figured it out. And what will be interesting to me to watch moving forward with Tony Bennett is, now that he's had success and now that he's sort of been validated, is will he recruit different players or a higher level of players, and will he stick to the playbook that has gotten him where he is? And that will be interesting to watch, I think.
Yeah, I mean, before this year, and one of the reasons why I doubted Tony Bennett, and, I fully admit that, I doubted Tony Bennett. I will not lie and say I said, hey, you should draft Peyton Manning. No, I said Ryan Leaf. I didn't actually say that, but that's the example I'm giving where nobody, right, by the way, Rick, right. In 2019, nobody thought Ryan Leaf should go ahead of Peyton Manning. I don't even know why it was a debate back then. There is nobody ever that actually said Ryan Leaf because nobody claims that anymore. Yeah. But I was one of those guys that had no belief in Tony Bennett at all because he got blown out by UMBC. You're right. He got blown out by Florida. He had another 26-point loss in the NCAA tournament as well. He had never really played the
game away to Syracuse.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were up 14 with, 12 minutes to play. So he gets outscored by Syracuse in that game, and they ended up losing by 6 against Syracuse. He got outscored by 20 points in the last 12, 13 minutes of that game. And so that's kind of another 20-point loss if you want to throw it up there. And so that's why I didn't believe in him. And so it's good for him because he caught a lot of flack. They have been really good in the regular season. They have been a phenomenal team for a while. Louisville has not been able to figure them out. Not many people have. And it finally resulted in success in the NCAA tournament. And I think it's good for college basketball, Rick, because you're right. I think it also proves that there isn't one way that you can win, and there also isn't one way to where you say you guarantee you can't win. That was the feeling with Tony Bennett. That way, you can't win in the tournament playing that way. And his style ended up winning.
What's interesting to me, though, is how I don't know the right word to think of, just how tenuous all this is. Because if they lose that game to Purdue, which right. they should have, or easily could have, and certain,
down 4 with 11 seconds to go.
We're still ripping. Yep. We're still ripping them. And if they blow that 10-point lead against Auburn, we're still criticizing him. But they don't, for whatever reasons, the shots went in this year, the other teams made mistakes, so there was a call made, and they win, and that now it becomes a validation where I think in some ways it's been validated all along by how good they've been in the regular season in the ACC. I mean, that's a much wider, deeper body of work, and I know that the tournament is what we all obsess over, and it's what the trophy's given out on, and it's where all the attention is, but I think what they've done in that league going against Carolina and Duke is a validation enough for me.
Yeah, I said down 4. That was the Auburn game actually when they were down 4, and then.
But weren't they down 10 against Auburn with 5 minutes to go?
They were up 10.
Up 10 and gave the lead away.
Yep, they were up 10, and then it was the 12-0 run by Auburn that included Ty Jerome picking up that awful fourth foul in the backcourt for no reason, and then Auburn really got on a roll after that. But they were down 3 to Purdue with 15 seconds to go. They were down 4 to Auburn with 16 seconds to play. They were down 3 to Tech with 22 seconds to play, and they won all 3 of those games. how many teams would not even win one?
If they would have lost that game to Auburn, the Knives would have been out, and they would have been chokers.
Yep.
And they would have been, they can't win the big one, and all of that stuff, and it would have already been in a bunch of stories, and all people would have had to do is hit the send button, and it had to be rewritten because they won that game. And so, a lot of the takes we have on this stuff. The difference between somebody being good and successful and doing it the right way and somebody falling short, it's really kind of arbitrary at times.
Rick Bozich, our guest from WDRB and WDRB.com. Maybe this was the case all along, but I'll ask you with the recent trend that is certainly at least the champions, it has been evident on paper. Is it now a requirement that you must be able to, as a team, knock down the outside shot, hit threes? Is that now a requirement if you're going to win the national championship?
Yeah, I think so. To win 6 games, there's going to be 1 or 2 games where the other team's going to be making them, or you're going to be behind, and you're going to have to find a way to catch up in a shorter period of time. And I think we've gotten to that point where you better have a couple dudes who can make the threes.
Yeah. Rick Bozich from WDRB and WDRB.com. Louisville gets their, notice, call, whatever, that the NCAA is going to do their inquiry with the FBI stuff going on. There's another trial that's going to start in 11 days from now, a week from Monday, that who knows what can come out of that trial. What do you make of Louisville's precarious position trying to win a lawsuit against Rick Pitino, proving that his coaches committed violations while now, being investigated by the NCAA, hoping they don't, hammer them for committing NCAA violations. What do you make of now the NCAA officially saying, yes, we are looking into these allegations?
Yeah, you're right. They are sort of dancing on a tightrope that way. We all knew this was coming, I think, though, but we pushed it out of our consciousness until after the tournament was over, and it's not surprising at all, and it'll be interesting to see how, you know, how the University of Louisville responds to it, whether there'll be a more vigorous pushback against the NCAA or slow playing it, because as we've all noticed that other schools that have been involved in this have taken less of a hit than Louisville has, and I know that Louisville had the prior situation with Katina, but it seems like a lot of schools have just sort of, you know, shrugged their shoulders at it and waited to see where the NCAA is going to take it next.
Yeah, on one hand, you know, it's they fired everybody, right? I mean, they fired everybody. There's nobody still in place. Like, what would be, in your mind, is there a punishment that can be severe that will, you know, be meat to the wolves that are out there, but also doesn't affect the current players and the current staff that quite literally weren't even at the spot where, you know, at the school when all this stuff was going on with those assistant coaches? Like, is there a happy medium there?
Yeah, I don't know what it would be. The people that are more to the letter of the law, I'm sure, are going to push for more probation. But I agree with you that, you know, that all the staff's gone, the players are all gone. There would be an element of unfairness to it to punish these guys for prior transgressions. But who knows? It's a small group of people in the NCAA that decide stuff, and you don't know, you know, at what point they want to make examples of which schools.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, they cared about the money, and the NCAA cared about, you know, the optics of the whole thing, what it looked like. That was the first go around. And this one, the money isn't exactly extreme. It's $1,300 to a dad for a rent payment and $900 to a family of a recruit that's unnamed. That's $2,200 that can be pretty darn severe for Louisville. But I think you could also maybe make a case, and we'll get to our Final Four here very quickly. I think you can also make a case, Rick. Now, they didn't take a postseason ban. Okay, so it's not like the previous go-around. But by firing Rick, they kind of took a postseason ban. Like, that team was number 16 in the nation when they fired Rick Pitino in the polls. And they end up missing the NCAA tournament because of that. Now, I don't know how much that's going to work in the infractions committee and in that meeting and in that for lack of a better term, courtroom with the NCAA. But it is kind of like, you know, they fire Rick, they fire the entire staff. David Padgett has to put together a skeleton crew. And they don't make the NCAA tournament from a team that was top 20 by every, you know, ranking service.
You're right. I mean, they did take a hit last year because of it, and total changeover in staff, support staff, other than Fred Hina. So it's a whole new deal. They took it seriously enough that they did make the change at a fairly significant cost. But, you know, there's going to be – there are going to be people – I don't know whether they're within the NCAA or going to say they violated the rules when they're already on probation, and some people do not look fondly upon that.
Rick Bozich from WDRB and WDRB.com. Rick, Final Four time for you. Four quickies. Just tell me the first thing that pops in your head if you are ready.
Yes, sir.
All right. If you're throwing a dart, who is the next coach to win their second national championship? Could even be somebody who hasn't won one yet.
Tom Izzo. I think it could be Tom. Yeah, I think Tom Izzo. They got a really good team coming back next year, as long as Winston comes back and, you know, if Langford gets healthy. I'll say Tom Izzo.
All right. He's going to have to figure out how to win five before he can win a sixth. But, yes, he's already got one, and he seems to be there a lot. He puts himself in position there in the national semifinal a lot. All right.
One for eight, right?
Yeah, he is, 2-6. Well, 1-8 in winning the whole thing. Yeah, you're right. 8 Final Fours, but he's 2-6 in the national semifinal game. So he's only, he's been there 8 times.
Yeah, that was 2009 when they lost to Carolina. I remember those years they weren't the best team, though.
That's a good point.
This year you could have made the argument that they were the best team. But
that is a good point.
A lot of those years they weren't the best team.
It's a little bit like LeBron. Maybe they had no business being there when they lost. And so only paying attention to losses and paying attention to the fact that they were a 4 seed a couple times and making the Final Four in that run. All right. If a coach tweets, does that actually take away from game prep?
I hope not. Most coaches, Tim Miles used to tweet at halftime. So, no, I think.
Well, he just got fired, so I don't know. I mean, he just got fired. Maybe it does. All right.
I think they can probably handle it. So, what I think Governor Bevin should have done is admitted that he made a mistake and invited the Louisville basketball team down to the governor's mansion for dinner one night just to congratulate him on having a nice season. That would have been taking the high road, but it doesn't work that way anymore.
I agree with that. And then not only that, but then it's like it's just we got out coached. We were expected to beat Connecticut. We should have beaten Connecticut. We have a really good team. We've been like, all of a sudden, it's like, what do you got, a mouse in your pocket? Like, all of a sudden, he's like been a part of the Louisville fan base of the women's bat. Like, he was a season ticket holder forever. Although he couldn't pick out Jeff Walls, you know, if he saw him, he wouldn't know him. But we, oh, yes. Fun times in Cleveland today. More impactful if they return, Jordan Wara or Tyler Hero.
I'll say Jordan Wara.
All right. And then last but not least, who wins next year?
Who wins the championship next year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I'll go with Michigan State.
Michigan State. All right. We will we'll see if Izzo can get it done. Rick Bozich, WDRB and WDRB.com. Go check it out, his piece that's up there on Louisville getting the at least the notice of inquiry from the NCAA. Rick, as always, I certainly appreciate the time, sir. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, there is Rick Bozich from WDRB and WDRB.com. Izzo. I love this. See, this is where it's like, hey, this is sports radio. It's perfect. Texture says, yeah, you're right. Izzo sucks. Hi, Straw Man. How are you? I hope there's no dust fire or brush fire anywhere near you, Straw Man, because you will burn up fast. MSU should fire him. Hashtag hot takes. Well, that's your hot take, guy. You're the one that says he sucks and they should fire him. I said he's really good at winning four. He doesn't win five. People don't listen. They're like the Tom Izzo of winning the national semifinal game. They just really aren't good at it.
You are listening to The Zone Podcast. Check out Jason Anderson weekdays 3 to 6 only on ESPN 680 and ESPNLouisville.com.
UPS is now hiring package handlers in Louisville. Package handlers earn competitive wages. And with UPS's Metropolitan College program, you can graduate 100% debt-free. Get in the game with UPS. Apply now at UPSJobs.
Your number one sports option in the afternoon is with The Zone, presented by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Jason Anderson.
Get a Westwood One Masters update coming your way in about 5 minutes or so. You know the movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner? I always forget the player's name that when they had the number one pick that he was going to take him and wrote down on a piece of paper this name, whatever it was, no matter what. And then he does that whole trade thing and they end up, you know, getting they were going to take the quarterback and all that stuff. They end up trading up or whatever. And then they trade back and they finally get the, and it was a great day. They got that particular player that they wanted anyway. I'm annoyed because as I was going into this, player pool type deal in the Masters, one of the guys I liked a lot that was really good value was Kevin Kisner. And I was like, you know what? Kisner, no matter what. Like, he was one of the guys that I wrote down and I circled. I'm like, I'm going to have Kisner on my team because the value's there. I can get a lot of other really good guys around him. And he's pretty good. He is now leading the tournament, but I didn't get him on my team. I ended up going a different route. I'm like, no, but if I do that, you know what? Do I really need Kisner? I know the value's there, but boy, I get value over here. Idiot. So anyway, he's minus three heading into the 15th. So good for him. You know, who really cares, right? Who really cares about that? It's just for fun. And when I say who really cares, the answer is nobody. Nobody except Magic. Magic is really enjoying it. Masters coverage presented by Baptist Sports Medicine, Wooded View Golf Course, and Kentucky Farm Bureau. As we're hanging out here in the Papa John's studio today, and we'll let you know, Radio XL, that is the promo code, Radio XL at Papa John's, and it is going to get you a extra large two topping pizza and a 2 liter for just $14. How about that? Extra large two topping and a 2 liter, $14. That is Radio XL at Papa John's. Thank you to Rick Bozich joining us and discussing a lot of the things that we've talked about throughout the day today in Lamar Kimball joining the Louisville Cardinals as a grad transfer. My guess, as you know, we talked about earlier in the show, my guess is that VJ King is not one of the guys that ends up returning to Louisville. And you know, that maybe that's just connecting the dots. Maybe it's, you know, hearing some of the reports and the whispers that, you know, there really wasn't a conversation between Chris Mack and VJ King when he put his name in the NBA draft. Yeah, that's right, Des. Mack. Vonte Mack. Thank you. Vonte Mack, no matter what. That's right. Now you can add Kisner no matter what. And I also did something stupid and ended up trading for a lesser player that did not get the $100 bill at the end of the playbook, because you didn't read the whole thing. It's in the movie. You'll have to check it out. You know, spoiler alert. Sorry about that. But putting, you know, two and two together, VJ King, the way that it was at least broken the story yesterday was that he will graduate this summer and can look at other options or look at his options if he doesn't enter or stay in the NBA draft. And it's like, why include graduating this summer and options if he's just putting his name in the NBA draft to test the waters to then return to Louisville? This is a, not comparing the two players, so I know that sometimes hearing what somebody says can be difficult, and straw men can be developed quite frankly frequently. It reminds me of, I think what it's going to be is Reed Travis. That Reed Travis was at Stanford, he put his name into the NBA draft, and it was like, well, he could return to Stanford, he could stay in the NBA draft, or he could be a grad transfer. And it was like, no, he wasn't going to stay at Stanford. He wasn't going to return and go to Stanford. He was either going to go to the NBA draft or he was going to be a grad transfer somewhere else. That's what I expect for that would be my guess for VJ King, because he didn't play last year. And now you're adding Williamson and David Johnson, throw in Nickelberry if you want to. Now you could even have, you know, Kimball and Darius Perry playing next to each other if you want to do that. You know, if Wara ends up returning, I mean, you know, playing time was limited last year, and it wasn't exactly like they were swimming in wings. It was Wara, Sutton, and VJ. That was it. And he still couldn't find the floor. They were playing Quan 4 and Sutton and Wara and no VJ until the end. Like, you know, and it sucks for him. He had a lot of promise and, you know, hype and expectation, and there was certainly some hope for, you know, how good he could have been when he got to Louisville. It didn't work out. So I don't think he's going to be at Louisville next year. He did say at the end of the year that he was going to return, but that's before you really start to look at everything and examine and analyze, you know, what your, you know, last year of college that you want that to be like. And that is going to be, you know, him, I think, somewhere else. So that would open up a scholarship too as well. They're sitting at 14. If Wara and Enoch return, they got to get down to 13 somehow. Here's the Westwood One Masters update.
From the Augusta National Golf Club, Westwood One Sports presents this special report on the Masters. I'm Ted Emmerich. Brooks Koepka could not compete here last year. He had a wrist injury that kept him out for 4 months. But Koepka won the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship on his way to being named Tour Player of the Year. Koepka is heating up in the first round today.
Brooks Koepka, whose tee shot landed 3 feet off the back edge of the green. He'll putt from there. This is second for birdie. Flag stick still in, rolling towards the hole, raises the putter in the air, and it falls.
What a great putt that was. He had to go through three different levels of grass.
Kevin Kugler and Maureen Medill with the call. Koepka with birdies at 10 and 12. He is 3 under par, sharing the lead with 7 other players at the moment, including Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, and John Rahm. You're listening to exclusive coverage of the 2019 Masters on Westwood One.
The world of Rolex is filled with stories of perpetual excellence. As golf's best players gather at Augusta National for the 83rd time, Rolex is once again present for the greatest moments in Masters history. In 1978, Gary Player overcame a 7-shot deficit for an unforgettable win. In 1997, Tiger Woods became the tournament's youngest champion. In 2004, Phil Mickelson sank a legendary birdie putt on the final hole to claim his elusive first major. In 2013, Adam Scott triumphed in a sudden-death playoff in the falling rain. And in 2015, Jordan Spieth's youthful brilliance earned him his first major, equaling the Masters' all-time scoring record. Rolex is proud to be a part of golf and celebrate the greatest Masters moments of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. This is a story of perpetual excellence. The story of Rolex.
Time now for a leaderboard update presented in partnership with Rolex. A bevy of golfers at 3 under par. In fact, 8 of them. Brooks Koepka is at 4 under par now, beg your pardon, with a birdie just moments ago at 13. So Koepka has claimed the solo lead in the first round of the Masters. He is a shot ahead of Justin Harding, Adam Scott, John Rahm, Kevin Kisner, Kiradek Apibarnrat, Ian Poulter, and Dustin Johnson. Bryson DeChambeau was at 3 under before a bogey at 14. So DeChambeau at 2 under par, 2 shots back. 14-time major winner Tiger Woods rock solid today, a 2 under 70. He is 2 shots off the lead. Ricky Fowler also cards at 2 under 70. On the course, Phil Mickelson and Jason Day at 2 under, playing the second nine, also at 2 under. Cameron Smith, Patton Kizzire, Rory McIlroy with a 1 over 73, and here's a surprise, the top-ranked player in the world, Justin Rose, 4 over through 12. From Augusta, I'm Ted Emmerich, Westwood One Sports.
You know, Rose has just not been good today. He has just not been good today. And since everybody really cares, I mean, everybody really cares about that. Not on my team. Not on my team. I would like them to show on ESPN right now. I mean, I would like them to show Justin Thomas because he's on the 13th. And, like, he's one of the most entertaining guys on par five, right? Like, if there's a par five, I want to watch Justin Thomas on a par five. Because, you know, it's like, you know, Happy Gilmore. Like, can he get there in one? He's sitting at even right now on the 13th. And so... yes, Koepka is making a move in this opening round. Lefty also playing well as well. So, again, they are, I mean, we're seeing every shot of Brooks Koepka, which is fine for the ladies out there and Cooper. But, you know, it's, I would like to see more of Justin Thomas if we could. We're going to see more of Brooks Koepka, too. He's in the body issue.
Coop wants to know why you want to see a guy from Alabama.
Well, he's not from Alabama. He went to Alabama. There's a difference.
Corin Coopy doesn't even claim Louisville.
Does he claim Oldham County? Not from Louisville, I'm from Oldham. I'm not sure. Either way, all right? All right, so there's your Masters update. I do want to let you know, coming up this weekend, we will have all of the coverage on ESPN Louisville is presented by Baptist Sports Medicine, Wooded View Golf Course, and Kentucky Farm Bureau. Louisville did get their notice of allegation, or excuse me, Louisville got the notice of inquiry from the NCAA. Boy, those are vastly different things. They got a notice of inquiry from the NCAA last night. Jeff Greer reporting that at The Athletic. And there's a number of things that I think, you know, that is difficult for Louisville in this situation that they're going to have to deal with now, is that they are going to be balancing this tightrope of, hey, Rick, we don't owe you a dime because your coaches committed NCAA infractions. Hey, NCAA, we did not commit NCAA infractions. Yeah, you did. And so they're going to have to approach it different ways. I think the approach for Louisville is going to be you countersue with Louisville to make sure he doesn't get a dime from Louisville, or more than, you know, he's suing for, what, $37 million or whatever they are owed in that particular contract that they fired him for cause. So you go after him and you say, look, Jordan Fair, Kenny Johnson, they were on your watch. They were your responsibility. Andre McGee, your watch, your responsibility. Continually, you did not hold up your end of the bargain and your responsibilities to manage your assistant coaches. You fired. All right. Yeah. Okay. You didn't know. Great. You're a crappy manager. Not good enough to keep your job. All right. That's a terrible defense, by the way. That is an awful defense. I'm a really bad manager. You can't fire me. Like, no, you can. So that's the tack that you take with Rick. It's $40 million on the line. And I think the defense for Louisville towards the NCAA is, look, man, we fired everybody. What more of a, oh man, an Atha Barnrad is also minus three as well, and he was somebody that I really wanted to put on my I'm so stupid, man. Like, there was like four or five guys that I'm like, this works. These are good value guys. I got to figure out a way to get them on my team. And none of them, well, I shouldn't say none of them, but, you know, not the ones that I should have taken. But you approach the NCAA and see if it sticks, right? You know, see if your defense works. It did not work last time with Chuck Smert. The strategy of agreed everything, you know, just say, yeah, it all happened, but we disagree that it should be only the money that we count. And they were like, no, it's what actually happened. This one, you fired Rick, you fired the AD, the president, all of that, it is gone. Board of Trustees, everything is different. Like, that's the way you present it to the NCAA, is that, no, it's not the same. It is different. It is not the way that other teams and universities have handled it as well. Texter says at 437-9680, by hiring Padgett, they did not clean house. He probably knew. It's okay. He probably knew. Therefore, they didn't clean house. Yeah, I mean, maybe, but it would not make sense. Like, examine it from this standpoint. It would not make sense for them to fire Rick Pitino, fire Jordan Fair, fire Kenny Johnson, and keep David Padgett if he knew what was going on. Like, what kind of sense does that make? They're already going to suck. You already took away Rick. What matters if you bring in somebody else? No. You got to take a chance in getting really hammered by the NCAA to keep David Padgett. No. Rick knew, Jordan knew, Kenny Johnson knew. They're all fired. David Padgett, well, he may have been a part of it, but let's just keep him and see what happens. Let's keep him and see what happens. Let's fire the AD, fire the head coach, fire two assistant coaches. Nah, he probably knew. Maybe he did. I don't know. But if the NCAA doesn't have anything on David Padgett, doesn't matter if you think he might have known, might not have known. So they did clean house for those that the NCAA would say were in the wrong. Rick Pitino, Kenny Johnson, Jordan Fair, they even fired the AD. So that is cleaning house, as opposed to Sean Miller's employed, Will Wade's employed, and Bruce Pearl got a contract extension. So comparatively speaking, the way that they reacted is on a much greater, larger, sharper scale than the other universities. Now, they were also on probation when this was going on. All right. So, and they also have multiple things to worry about. $1,300 from Jordan Fair, $1,300 from Kenny Johnson to Bowen Sr., $900 from Jordan Fair to an unnamed recruit, and them doctoring the visit record of Brian Bowen Jr. on his unofficial visit. First of all, omitting Christian Dawkins on purpose, specifically communicating, make sure you do not put him on that. Then the whole thing comes out, compliance gets wind of it and says, no, you got to put Christian Dawkins on there. Then they do. But they label him as an AAU coach. The doctor. There is no cure for the producers. They are coming up next. Enjoy it on ESPN 680 105.7. We'll be back tomorrow.
You are listening to The Zone Podcast. Check out Jason Anderson weekdays 3 to 6 only on ESPN 680 and ESPNLouisville.com.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
That's upsjobs.com.